This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beautiful, beautiful spring day. Spring is officially underway, and it's going to be cooler than it was yesterday. Highs today only approaching 70, not even approaching 70, approaching the mid-60s, and that's going to be towards sunset. Then tomorrow, highs of 67, 74 for a high on Saturday, 76 for a high on Sunday. Man, get out, do them activities while you can outdoors, because it's going to be brutally hot before you know it, 52 degrees right now. And they got early voting is underway for the constitutional amendments that are on the ballot. We've been talking about them because they are pretty important, and we've been trying to give you an overview so you know what you're voting on. Some of this stuff is very, very complex. We are checking in now with Stephen Procopio, our friend, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, or as it's otherwise known, PAR. How you doing, Stephen?
Oh, doing great, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Stephen, we got a couple of seconds here extra, so I would ask you, just because we haven't addressed it in a while, why is the Public Affairs Research Council the acronym PAR and not P-A-R-C, PARC?
That's because, PAR occasionally irritates lawmakers, and so there was one particularly a couple decades ago that, said, PAR's recommendation, they're nothing but their name backwards, crap. So we dropped one of the letters and just went with PAR rather than P-A-R-C.
Just to let people know where PAR is and where the legislature is, not everybody, but just in general. Tell me quickly, though, as we do talk about it, what is the Public Affairs Research Council?
We're a nonprofit, independent, nonpartisan research group and watchdog. So, for example, we've been around for 75 years, and in 1950s when we were formed, 1952, we put out our first guide to the constitutional amendment. So that's how long we've been working on these things.
This is complicated stuff, and it takes a team of people to try to figure out what they're going to do, what they're not, when it comes to constitutional amendments. I know sometimes as a voter, Stephen, look, back in the old days, man, I'm going to tell you what, it was so nice just to jump in line and vote no, jump in line, not even do your own thinking, and vote either Democrat or Republican, not even think one way or the other. Just, yeah, sure, good. Let me let you make up my mind for me. It's so much easier to do it that way. It's so much easier to vote no to every amendment just to say, well, I don't know about it. I'll just vote no. But that's not really the way to be an informed voter, right? You got to do your own thinking, and you got to understand what's best for the state, and then weigh that about what's best for your own interest and decide which is more important. I'm way off base here or not?
Oh, you're exactly right. And look, some people have an instinct to vote no on the amendments because they don't like amendments. But they also need to realize some of these amendments would actually slow down the need to have future amendments. So you really have to look at each one and see, okay, is this going to be able to help me out in the future? Because maybe we're not putting more stuff in the Constitution. We're taking stuff out.
Let's talk about Amendment 1.
Okay. So there are three amendments that are all sort of judicial amendments, 1, 3, and 4. The first one, the big thing it does is allow the legislature to create specialty courts. Now, that specialty courts already exist at the judicial district or parish level. A lot of drug courts, about half of them, are a big example. This would allow statewide or regional courts to be established. And I think what the author was looking at, one of the things he suggested that could be done was to create a statewide business court.
Amendment 2? Three. Three. Let's go to 3 and 4, and then I'll come back to 2 after the break.
3 is relatively simple, although there's a lot of controversy over it. There's a list of 16 crimes in the Constitution that said, hey, if it's one of these crimes, then you can try a juvenile as an adult for them. Not necessarily that a judge and a prosecutor have to agree, but those are the things that can be. And if it's not on that list, you can't be. This would move that list out of the Constitution, and then these the legislature could make changes to it in statute with a 2/3 vote. So you can add things, modify them, or take them out.
And how about number 4?
Number 4 is almost a technical change. When we adopted these closed primary systems for some race, it made it difficult to hold a race, a vacancy race for judges within 12 months, depending on when a judge, you know, left office, because we're going to add an additional primary. We've got a primary and a runoff in the primary, and then the general election. So it may not be possible to get it done within 12 months. So this would say, hey, you got to get it tried and done in 12 months if possible, but if not, you can extend past that.
All right, let me take a break. We'll get to 2. That's the big one. Amendment number 2 coming up. You can early vote now. The election itself is on March 29th. I don't know how big it's going to be. We're talking to Stephen Procopio, our friend, president of the Public Affairs Research Council. Stephen, do you all take a position on this or not, on these amendments?
No, take a position on any constitutional amendments. We get asked every year, but we think we add more value just to try and clarify it for people.
And I would suggest, please, go to parlouisiana.org, and you'll find a guide to the constitutional amendments. It'll give you a synopsis, and it'll tell you what a vote for does and what a vote against does, because sometimes you think you're voting no, and you're really voting yes, and the opposite as well. We'll talk about the budget overhaul when we return. 721 Traffic Now, WWL. 7:26 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Stephen Procopio, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, PAR, as it's otherwise known. I suggest before you vote, please check out their amendment guide at parlouisiana.org, and it'll tell you what a vote for does, what a vote against does, and give you a little synopsis. Amendment number 2 is huge, Stephen, so I'm just going to turn the floor over to you.
Yeah, it's a very different type of amendment. The Constitution lets you rewrite an entire article, and that's what this is. We've never done that before. And it rewrites Article 7, which is the biggest article in the Constitution, the tax and spending one. So we broke it down into a couple of general categories. So there's general tax changes. So, for example, there'd be a standard, a doubling of the standard deduction for those over 65. It would also lower the maximum tax rate allowable from 4.75 to 3.75. That is not going to affect anyone's taxes immediately. That just hamstrings what the legislature can do in the future. So they either won't raise your taxes too much, or maybe won't be able to raise your taxes as much as needed, depending on your point of view. There's also a gross limit that's created. It kind of acts as a circuit breaker. If there's too much money coming in, then this would slow it down. And so you can only spend those things on non-recurring items like roads and bridges and buildings. There also is going to merge 2 of our state savings accounts. Like when we have essentially a shortfall, we tap one of these things either for a disaster or a recession. So these would become one larger savings account. The big one is probably the teacher pay raise or pay change. This is taking money from 3 funds that have about $1 billion in there, using that money to pay down teachers' retirement debt. And that frees up an additional $1 billion in interest. That will lower payments that the locals have to make by about $200 million. And then that money would go toward making permanent the teacher pay raise they already have. So that's about $2,000 for teachers and about $1,000 for local support staff. There's obviously a lot of questions on that one. Another big one is property taxes. It moves a lot of exemptions from the Constitution into statute. And says you need a 2/3 vote to change them. The biggest one is probably the industrial tax exemption program. That will move out. A homestead exemption is not getting changed, so everyone needs to understand that one. And then the taxes on inventory, which businesses have been complaining about for a long time, is anti-competitive. Mm-hmm. The locals would have the ability to either eliminate or lower that. It would require the approval of a parish sheriff, the parish authority, parish government, and also the school board if you wanted to do that. And then there's about 7 funds that are going to move out of the Constitution into statute, and that will require a 2/3 vote to change those. That's a very high-level, quick overview of what's in Constitutional Amendment number 2.
Yeah, a question I had is, how hard was it for PAR as a team to go through especially Amendment number 2 and grasp all of the intended and potential...
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Unintended consequences of this amendment.
We spent a lot of time on it. I have a really good research director, Melinda Delott, and she did just an incredible amount of work doing this. And then to let everyone know, we share our initial drafts with stakeholders on both sides to try and get their feedback as well as sort of technical people from legislative staff, just to make sure that we're saying the right thing. So it takes a lot of work to get these done. We get a lot of complaints if we don't get it out soon enough. People start calling our office saying, where's the guy? So that's why it takes us so long, because we're trying to do a good job.
It's hard to be informed on amendment number two. Would you agree? I mean, really?
Yeah, it takes more work to do this one than all the other three amendments we've talked about combined. There's a lot there. You're rewriting an entire article. Now, either that's just too confusing and people don't like it, or it's necessary because there's so much in there and it really hasn't been updated in any comprehensive way since 1974.
Pleasure as always. Thank you, Stephen Procopio, President of Public Affairs Research Council. Again, I would urge you to be a knowledgeable voter. Educate yourself. Go to parlouisiana.org and at least familiarize yourself before just voting yes or no on each or any of them. We'll take a break. Talk to Joe Geruso. When we come back, time now, WWL First News. All right, 7:46, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council. Remember to talk about this settlement agreement between the Orleans Parish School Board and Mayor Cantrell's administration. And Joe, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. I'm great. How about you?
I'm all right. A lot of this happened during the Super Bowl, and some of it got lost. So take me back to the beginning, where this whole money thing started with, please.
Sure. Well, it actually predates the Super Bowl. Several years ago, the school board sued the city of New Orleans, saying the city had for decades really wrongfully withheld collections due solely to the school board. And what they really meant by that, Tommy, was the city would collect property taxes and other taxes in the name of the school board, but then keep for itself an administrative fee. And that administrative fee is A, high, and B, it's also not part of the ballot language or any tax language that allowed the city to withhold that much money. So the bottom line is somewhere on the magnitude of $135 to $150 million was claimed to be owed by the school board, by the city of New Orleans to the school board. And then obviously, as we were watching what happened with the school board economic problem, my thinking and in concert with the CAO was, well, this is an opportunity for us to do two things. Number one, right-size this lawsuit so we had cost containment for the city and remove a major liability, but also obviously help the kids in the city of New Orleans who are going to have an economic problem without an infusion of cash. So what typically happens, Tommy, during the budget process is the CAO is not just the lead negotiator, but the negotiator for the mayor. And as long as I've been on the council, and certainly while I've been the budget chair is the lead negotiator on behalf of the council. And what we try to do is have conversations about what's happening, how we try to manage expectations. And part of our discussions beginning in November, which included other members of the administration, were, can we reach a settlement and what does it look like? And about in mid-November, I sent what has been termed a term sheet to the school board, copying Councilmember Morrell and the CAO, that said, on behalf of the administration, the council, here are the terms that we're willing to offer to the school board to accept. The school board wrote back ultimately and said, we accept those terms. And then we put the first part of the $90 million payment, the $10 million that was due by January 1, in the budget ordinances, which the mayor signed. And then as we got closer to payment and having more things happen, what happened next? The administration said, well, we have a financial crisis. And their slide literally says in the presentation, imminent financial instability is here, and we never made a deal with you. So the school board sued the city and the mayor to say there was a deal. We joined the lawsuit, the council did, to say that's right, and the judge issued her ruling yesterday.
So before we go to break, we'll pick it up. We come back. Just to recap, school board said they have a $50 million deficit caused by a tax revenue projection error of its own making. The city skimmed $90 million off of the property taxes that they were collecting as a service fee that the school board says is illegal. From that, the total skim was $90 million. Is that right or not?
The total skim may have been as much as $135 or $150 million.
All right, so let's go up to $135 million. Let's make it conservative. So from that, we go to the skim was $135 million. From that, we go to a $90 million settlement. City saying, no, we don't have the money for that. So now you tried to work it out, $10 million a year of a $90 million settlement out of $135 million. Where do we stand now?
We're seeing now the judge issued a perplexing ruling that says the first $10 million, that is the January 1 money, is owed, but there is no settlement otherwise. And I know you said you got a break coming up, but I'm happy to explain sort of the practical effects of what that means.
Do
when
that.
You come back from the
do
break.
That, please, when we come back, Joe, because that's a lot of money, man. It just seems like we skim 135 to 150, and then we go to 90. Now we're talking about 10. Where'd all that money go? I feel like I'm Fred Sanford sitting here saying, now hold on a minute here, Lamont. Wait a second. 7:51, 9 till 8, traffic now, WWL. Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Joe Geruso, New Orleans School Board. Dealing with a $50 million deficit caused by a tax revenue projection, the city been skimming $135 to $150 million over property taxes that they've been collecting, supposed to be collecting for the school board. Then there's a settlement that's involved. This is no way to run a government or a school board, Joe, but that aside, give me the recap now, what you wanted to say, please.
Well, what I want to say is, listen, the judge's ruling has made a number of losers in all of this. Loser number one is the kids who aren't going to immediately get their money that we negotiated, but the council is going to try to make some maneuvers to fix that. Loser number two is the administration. If you read the judge's opinion, what she says is that the mayor did not know of the settlement. Well, I don't think she realizes, but that either means she didn't pay attention to her staff telling her that a settlement was in place and what happened, or it unfortunately feeds into the narrative that the mayor is checked out and not paying attention to what's happening right now in the city of New Orleans. And that really hurts the mayor and the administration more than it hurts us. And then the last one is, really, now we're going to have to make things harder in government in order to get things accomplished. And by that, I mean the mayor sends us legal instruments, usually ordinances, sometimes motions, to pass on their behalf. They're not the council members' motion or ordinance. They're the administration's. Well, do I need an attestation now that the mayor has read from start to finish what the motion or ordinance is, that she understands it, that she's authorized other people to negotiate on her behalf, and by submitting it to us, this and the terms related and collateral to that are going to be part of what's going on? I mean, that kind of seems like a really goofy and backwards way of doing business. So I'm perplexed because I feel like the whole point of government right now in particular is how do we provide services to people How do you have constructive conversations? How do you streamline things to make it better? How do you remove this major liability off the city's books and also help the city's kids? And the current state of the opinion sets all of that back.
Quickly, when it comes to the other mess with the travel thing, is the city attorney going to represent the city council, Joe, or do you know Ines?
No, because there's a clear conflict here, there will be outside counsel for everybody. So the city attorney will very much be on the outside looking in and will not be a part of this at all.
Could this be maybe more legal fees than would have been involved in a travel budget or not?
Well, that's the point Councilman Morrell, Tommy, keeps on making repeatedly, too, is if we're saying we're in this dire financial crisis, number one, why is travel something that you're doing? And then number two, why are we spending money unnecessarily on lawyers? P.S. Number three, the mayor could have and should have vetoed this ordinance and didn't even do that.
Thank you, Joe.